Like a heart of master, introspect yourself. We are, when we write diary, we give allowance. You see? That, like a third heart taskmaster, you see, just it yourself.
That's the thing that's always confused me about the diary. That's why, I'm not making excuses, but that's why I haven't kept it. Because how can you be sure that you're being honest with yourself when you put down these
things? I tell you, look at, when you're told to do a thing by a master, why you raise questions first thing? If you don't understand, ask him, why you discontinue? That's your first thing, straight out. There's some reason for that. Mind is a very, cunning friend. He will deceive you. He says, well, look here, you cannot give all your imperfections. You're telling lies. Don't do it. You see? Wait. When you become perfect, only you do it. Both of you are caught. You begin, the point is, in the beginning, you won't find so many imperfections within you. The more you go into it, you find day and from day to day more. Those of which become more in number, they are already existing. But we were not aware of them. Those, you follow the movement? Only when we don't, I am telling like I should not do it. That means you leave off. You never, when a thief is in the room, mind that, I tell you, he will try to just deter your attention to somebody else. You see? He may come ahead, the thief goes, here the thief goes. He never lets your attention be drawn to him, you see? So mind is a very cunning friend, I say, so cunning thief in the form of a true friend. He was a very, sympathetic man. Look here, you see. Why, you should, you must become perfect. Do some dungeon diary. Not now. Master said, do it. You disobey the orders of the master and obey the dictates of your mind. Something what you don't follow, ask him, you see. There's something at the back of it. If you start, you see, I know quite fully well that you cannot note down all the imperfections of the day. You know Pellman's system of memory? The system, what is called how to dwell memory, that is called Pellman's system of memory. From morn when you rise, just think what you have been doing all through the day. Oh yes, I rose up, I answered the call of nature, I had a bath and took a food, went to my work. That's all general. The work was saying, I come home, that's all. And one or two events might have come to you. No? But when you know what were the thoughts striking you in your mind, even while going to the answer the call and while bathing after that, that requires going into. The more you go into, the more number you find. In that way, once the memory is strengthened, I tell you, without any payment. And further, our level of criterion for distinguishing right from wrong is also changed. The more you learn, go into the scriptures, your angle of vision is changed. For instance, in the beginning, he told me, like, I put a slap on his face, oh, I did all right. He did for that. That your angular vision. When you later, oh, he called me names. All right. Then when you grow in a well, he called you names, told you something wrong. You also called names. He told you one, you said two, then came four, then eight, like that. If you are not returned, that would remain only one, isn't it? Your angular vision changed, is it not? So, even when, if you don't see somebody at all, they thought evil of you. Well, if you don't say from your mouth that, oh, he's bad man. You see? You're acting there. These failures are to be noted. So, as two things are, first, we, as you go into it, we find more number of shortcomings. And further, the angle of vision has changed, there's still more number. The more it grows, it means you are progressing, I tell you. You know how many shortcomings are within you. Then they go down, number when you weed out. When they are concerned, you refresh. You see, you can read other's mind, you can see what is going on the other side of the wall. Purpose of maintaining that is very definite, you see. Very high purpose. Don't follow the dictates of the mind. If you follow 100%, only then you can have the full mystic soul. We only follow what we can modify it by the dictates of mind. Some 10%, 20%, 40%, nobody would obey 100%. This is only one thing to be learned. Then every time, oh yes, he is within, how can I deceive him? Your angle of view will be changing. And when you are cleansed that way, something by outer self-introspection and somewhat by coming in contact with that power within, then you progress like that. Sometimes Master appears, he is giving him back. Sometimes he is quiet. Sometimes very happy. Sometimes he talks to you. So when you turn away your face, it means there is something wrong. We don't know. So that is meant for very high purposes. How are you? How are you? How are you? How are
you?
How are you? How are you? I am not exactly, I am not what talk is there. Alright, as you please. Now these certain things, you see, are not given in talks, regular talks. When you are certain that you go into the bottom of the things, what is what? Each man has the same problem practically, maybe in a little modified form. If you keep up your diaries, I tell you, regularly 3-4 months, like a heart of master, you'll change. And be blank. What more concession you want?
Just then if you let you keep.
You send me blank, I will accept, you see. That. How long you will dare to send blank? That's the point. You cannot send. Mind, I tell you, cunning thief in the form of friend. He will deceive you in a very noble way. You see, appear to be very friendly. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you see that you are let down. What you follow the decrees of mind. Yes?
Now, you just gave very good examples, mostly concerning the thoughts that we have.
Thoughts are very potent, you see.
Yes, well, there is, of course, pride and envy and jealousy and resentment towards others and thinking badly about others, and then of course purity or chastity and now is there any you sort of leading us very well, and I sometimes sit over this sheet and I think, now what else is there that I have done wrong, and I just am missing sometimes a clue, and I just, you know, is there anything else that you would like to lead us to?
That is just putting in time for meditation, coming in contact with the light and sound principle within. That is what is wanted. That will help you. Yeah, the more progress you will have. Some kinds of people, what do they see? They bring me diary. I see it. All right. The lights are very pure. And they put in also 2 hours there. And there's little progress or no progress. I told him, if your diary, this is correct, then you should have gone to the third plane. You see? You are If our lives are quite flawless, why should we not progress? Even after putting in time. Or it may be due to wrong way of doing, involving breathing, this and that should be set right.
Well, they've got somebody else.
We deceive our own self, I tell you.
Right.
Well, whatever you remember, put it. Try to think every what thought struck me. Not that what your body did it. Like a very hot taskmaster, I tell you. Don't spare yourself. And you don't spare your enemy. Don't spare yourself. This is the most dangerous. And in a friend, you see, serpent in the form of a friend. He will deceive you. He will just try to retard your progress and just keep you lead away to the negative thing. Attachment to the outside thing. Deter you from going on the way. And instead of shortcomings within our own self, we begin to doubt the master. This is it. I mean, the work of the mind. You will do it. At least that way you see there's light, there's sound. That way you see. That are you are convinced. Then why not progress wonderfully further? There is something wrong.
But you can't go back to pick it up because you haven't had it with you, the paper. So you leave it blank because you don't want to put in this time, or you remember everything. You know that these things helped you to get well, sound current and but you didn't put anything in because you couldn't be truthful about the exact time. I suppose it's even like the eye. You can't, I don't know how to explain it. So it's empty. It's blank. You feel badly that way too?
That's all right. If for some reason or the other you cannot complete your diary correctly, but you're watching your life. You're watching your life. And you must be progressing too.
Mm-hmm.
When you're putting in more time, sickness gives you more time for meditation.
Yes.
Does it not? If you're putting in more time, there's no flaws like there, you must have more progress. Is it not? Then in that case, you are not being filled in on the count of your eyes not working, that is immature. But eyes cannot go on all along like so.
No, with the eye, I
can't
meditate at all. Just can't believe the eyes. I mean, if you're in the hospital, you can meditate. I mean, suppose you get going through for tips or something like that, or different things about it. With this, I couldn't meditate because to see my eye
wanted
to come this, I couldn't
see. Well, that's what that was painting, all right. You can hear the sound.
Yes, that came very clear. Even
that's right. That is only temporary, short period sometimes. And moreover, I tell you, the most painful it may be if you are just trained in a way to control your attention, even the pain won't be felt. That is when you are dwelt. Feeling comes only when attention is there. Just like when you have to just inject, you see. It's all right, do it, you just control your attention. That is not so pinching, so paining, you see. And otherwise you will feel more. Don't listen, please, what she says, because she might be calling names. Calling names, not to you, maybe to somebody.
Yes,
yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. Yes, yes, sir. eulogize, you say praise as well as this, he would not like to hear.
Master, may I raise a question?
Beg pardon?
I have another question. It joins on what you were saying.
Yes, well, sure.
You say how our mind can deceive us and lead us away from the direction.
Yes.
Yet, one does not want to enter into this as a purely emotional experience. Well, then how am I to come to decide, to judge? I have to use my mind.
You'll get help.
To judge.
You'll get help.
I see, but then earlier you told me that I must not be able to expect to understand and rationalize everything.
Well, yes, intellectually you must grasp the theory, you see. The work that has to be done by a learned man and the unlearned man is the same. You see? You have to withdraw your attention from all sides, then your mind, then your body. You see? Just think, leave off all habits, analyze yourself from the body, that's a practical thing. A learned man say, why should I withdraw it? Okay, what will I get? There are two men, one is a learned man, the other is an unlearned man. You order them, go up there, up the stairs. He says, well, how many steps there are? Well, if I lead to such and such, what will happen? Anybody would slip away, then who say me? So many things you can say now. The man who down and all and you run up. So we have to do things. You see, learned man will understand only then he will start. The other doesn't need all that botheration, I tell you. They'll go ahead all at once. Two men, one was a learned man, the other was an unlearned man, both went to a master, are being put on the way. And the master told the learned man, I'll charge you double fee. And to the other man who was unlearned, he said, I'll charge you only single fee. The learned man knows, I know so much, I'm learning so much. Why are you charging me? So he told her, I have to make you first unlearned and then you. So both they have to do the same thing. Difference lies on this matter. If a learned man is there with experience inside, he will explain the same thing so many ways. Even unlearned man, he goes up and takes you up. He may not be able to quote from so many, masters in the past times or so many in matter of inferences, but he will give you this thing and he will quote only from the vocabulary or the environment he is in. Look here. Christ said, farmers, Christ said, sow seeds. Very naturally told him, though they fall on the stony ground, they won't grow. Though they fall in the hedges, they grow and but retard. Though they should fall on the well prepared ground, they will grow. And this is how he will quote that thing. Well, masters never were educated in any college or university. Do you know in which college Christ read or Guru Nanak read? Our Prophet Muhammad read. Did you know any college? I don't think so. That's something awakening from inside. They see. It's not a matter of inference, feelings, or emotions. It's a matter of seeing. They see and they make others see that.
Master, may I ask a question?
Yes, surely, like an attorney. From the attorney, only God is afraid, I tell you. No, you're most welcome. I'm just. I'll tell you a story later on, but.
Master is a great scholar.
Beg pardon?
the master is a great scholar, as we know.
Is it?
I'm sure his academic attainments have not thwarted his spiritual path.
Yes.
And therefore, I would say that intellectual accomplishments can very often be helpful.
Very often, gay intellectual attainments is the garland of flowers round the neck of a practical man. He will explain the things in so many ways, in whatever way he will take up it, tell you something to prove it, at the level of his common sense too, you see. But a learned man without any experience, well, that is a old lady, that is something loading like a library only. The brain has so many things in the brain, but a library can give you in your brain and your flexible feet. Learning is good, you see. I'm not denouncing it.
Well, now, I'm going to take the risk of asking a second question.
No, there it goes.
which probably is an intellectual question, but it bothers me.
That could be best I know.
And it's prompted by the discussion of this sister over here on,
that's right.
On Yogananda.
Yes.
Now, Yogananda was a great yogi.
Yes.
And in the master's book, The Crown,
yes.
And I think it's around about page 138.
Yes.
I may be off a page or two, but it's...
No, wonder.
The master touches on this very subject.
Yes.
In pointing out the highest plane of the yogis.
Yes.
And then he goes on to discuss four additional planes.
Yes.
Satchkan. And the three higher planes beyond that.
Yes.
And it would be very helpful to me, Master, if you would touch on that subject and tell us a little about those four planes.
Right. Four planes. Well, from the yogi's point of view. From which point of view?
These are the four planes that the Master discusses, which are above the highest plane of the yogi.
As in the yogi, generally, there are stages of yogis too. Some are yogis, some are yogiraj. Yogishwar. There are two stages of yogis.
Yes, you mentioned those two stages.
Yes, that's what I said.
And then you go on to discuss Satchkan, Alakadam, and
Anandam. That's right. So yogi generally go to the first place, Sansara, Sansargam. Yogeshwar goes to the third plane and he dips into the beyond of it. And the sant, whatever is called, that who reaches the satnam, the two home of the father, two father, you might say. And there is param sant, who transcends even those three high planes and becomes one with the worldless. Is it? These are the stages. There are many people belonging to the first stage and some to the second or third. Few there are who really have transcended beyond the three. And those who are regular in the fourth plane, you see, they are called sons. Fourth plane is just divided, some people mingle up into one, some two. Brahman, Par Brahman, you see something. So, two plane or Satchkhand, whatever it is, this is the stage of the full effulgence of the wordless God into expression. And then further, just going to be absorbed. Allah Khagama Nami Swami, Asrada Swami, Niralar, Mahalyan, whatever they call it. So that is the stage of the highest water called term that is Paramsant. Sutai Satsamsa, you might say, to Paramsant. So that's the difference.
Well, now my limited intellect
yes.
can almost picture Satchkan which the master describes as pure spirit.
Yes.
But then you, the master goes on to describe three planes above the planes of Satchitan, which itself is pure spirit. And that's hard for me to...
No. Mark the difference in the words that I'm using. I said the Satnam is the full expression of the world state of God into full expression is Satnam. It's fully expressed. Higher plane that goes absorbing, you see, until it comes to the world state where there is no light, no sound. Those are the above stages. Ultimately, in the world state, there is no expression of light or sound. That comes only when it comes into expression. So you might say the Satchitans, there are different divisions, you might say, of Satchitans. You see? Alag Khagam and ultimate world estate is what is called. Nameless one, Mahadeva or Lada Sunya Swaminas.
Well then, Master, would Agam be the first stage of manifestation?
Generally, that power which is in full expression, that takes the form of a guru. He is the Satnam, you see, working in him in the human form. And then Satnam, the duty comes further to adopt the Padma. The guru has also got stages. Guru, Gurudev, Sadguru. You see? Guru is one that the human field is working. But it is the God in him, you see, working. He is conscious. Gurudev is one when you rise above physical body, that works in the plane second to fourth, up till fifth, to absorb you in the Satnam. That is called Gurudev, means radiant form of the Master. Then Satnam is the true Sadhguru. You see? That absorbs you by Seji Alakadam and like that. So there are stages of the Guru too. We are everybody called a Guru. Guru is something given to such a person that whose human form, God is working for the guidance of man, human, guidance of mankind. You see? He sometimes loves you, sometimes I say, all right, don't do it. You see? At the level of man. But inside he's fully conscious, he gives you the right guidance. And when you rise above physical body, he comes in radiant form. What is called Gurudev? Gurudev means Guru, effulgent Guru, you might say. That guides you in the higher plane, second, third, fourth. And last you in the Satnam. And Satnam further, that duty is left you. That absorbs you in the world state. And further stages are of the Paramsanta, the Santara, going into the Paramsanta state. But the only people make no difference. They say everybody is a Guru. You follow me a bit?
Yeah.
Yes. These are the things given in the scriptures but not differentiated. And we are not convinced unless we begin to see for our own self. As there was one Indramati in the time of Kabir. Even now you find like that, those who dwell. He went to the fifth plane, saw Satpurush as Kabir. He told him, Kabir, if you were certain of yourself, why did you tell me before? And he said, had I told you that I am the Satpuri, you would never have believed me. Even now, you see, how many there are, yesterday I told who, how many there are who believe, think Master is Master. When everything goes on right according to your own wishes, and glory, Master is great, Master is greater than God. And anything goes against your wish, oh, what is that Master? Flower may be lying within you, you are not putting it away. Oh, Master, well, you are incomplete. Master is there to wind up your actions. Wind up the whole of us like a bank which fails, you see. Winding up us. Whatever many things are here, brought into fruit, the other sort of sometimes make your soul stronger too. They lose all pinching of eggs. When you become selfless, you see, right? You're safe. Now you, as you progress, you'll be more convinced. And with little progress, sometimes we are puffed up. Oh, I know that. And I tell them, look, you do that. Like, otherwise, you don't have just curse you. So what is the result? The whole science is lost, I tell you. And such like people become defamation to the teachings. No business. Go on with it. You'll have any difficulty there that will solve also. On our soul.
Good morning. Welcome to the Satsang of Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was the last 30 minutes of a question and answer session titled, Mind is a Thief in the Form of a Friend, given in Washington, D.C. on 23rd January 1964. Our reader this morning is David Halliburton. Hello, David.
Hello, and good morning, everyone. I'm going to continue reading a talk I started last time I read called The Purpose of Human Life, and it was published in the March 1968 issue of Satsandesh, and I'll be continuing on page 7. Man is enveloped by flames of passionate desires, anger, greed, attachment, and vanity. One can escape himself from delusion only by contacting the Word within. The most important task before us, therefore, is to withdraw our attention from outside and get attuned with the divine melody within. Then comes eternal peace in the form of the Word. Whosoever has accomplished this essential task is really successful in life. Otherwise, any amount of learning, name, and fame have no real meaning. It is high time that we learn to rise above body consciousness and know the real self in us. Swami Vivekananda said, "Contemplate the form of Guru, and serve him true, and he shall lead thee away from all harm." Swamiji now tells us how to link the soul with the Nam power. He says that three steps should be taken to rise above body consciousness. First is Simran, contemplation, continuous remembrance of the Almighty. Secondly, service to the Master. Thirdly, control of all desires. We are always busy in contemplating worldly affairs. If we have to establish a contact with the Word of God, we must first constantly remember Him by any name of our choice. This should be our first and foremost ideal by inculcating the habit of His contemplation every moment of our life. We have to replace worldly thoughts by contemplating the Word. Contemplate on Him alone ceaselessly, so much so that you begin to feel the pangs of His separation. Thus, the first step is His remembrance. Remembrance leads to love, which in turn results in pangs of separation. This creates a strong urge for the Beloved. In the Gurbani, we have only one to remember and to sigh for. Sing ceaselessly His praise alone. Meditate on Him with all the love in thee. Simran should be undertaken with intense love for God. Love brings concentration. One forgets the whole world while contemplating one's Beloved. Another purpose of Simran is to identify the soul with its real form. Yet another aim of Simran is to enable the self to know itself. As it is, the soul is completely identified with the physical body. It has to be withdrawn from the body and concentrated at its seat, in the center of the eyebrows. In the Gita, Lord Krishna says that great ones traverse into the cave, starting from a place above the nose. There are various methods of doing Simran with the help of a rosary, or with tongue, or in throat and heart. However, saints do not advise these methods, as these are apt to become mechanical and allow the mind to wander away. Thus, concentration of attention through those methods may not be possible. Saints have therefore advised the practice of Simran with the tongue of thought. All saints, including Maulana Rumi, Guru Arjan, and Swamiji, have indicated this spiritual path. Guru Arjan prayed, "O saints, take pity on us. We have yet to learn to serve our souls." We are working on the mental and sensual planes. Until we learn to rise above body consciousness, our plight remains unchanged. Yogis try to control breathing through kumbhak to achieve concentration of attention. It is a difficult process, and everyone cannot practice it. Saints, therefore, do not interfere with the breathing function. They concentrate their attention at the seat of the soul, behind and in the center of the two eyes, by means of Simran with the tongue of thought. If it is done with rapt attention, the soul will cease to flow out through the body pores. The body will then become senseless. It is only thereafter that the concentrated soul gets the contact of God. However, Simran with the tongue of thought is not as easy as it appears to be. It can be accomplished successfully only through the blessings of a competent master. Now, there is a difference between practicing Simran by repeating the names given by a competent master and the name or names taken out of scriptures of one's religious belief. The names given by a competent living master at the time of initiation are charged with his thought transference and have tremendous force in them. This type of Simran, therefore, is above all other forms of Simran. The Vedas and other scriptures have stated that in order to seek God, one must seek the guidance of a true master. Besides giving the charged names, the master also gives a practical contact with the divine power. Now, the question is, how to get that competent guidance? Swamiji tells us to serve the master. One can serve the master in many ways, physically, financially, intellectually, and spiritually. One should lead a chaste and clean life. Keep the body ever engaged in selfless service. This is physical service. As for monetary service, spend a part of your income for charity. After fulfilling your family requirements, you must keep aside a part of your earnings in the name of God. This is a duty one must not neglect. Service by heart and mind means love for all, hatred for none, and observance of truth. The service of the soul is of the highest order. To do this, one has to rise above body consciousness and to open the inner eye. Hazur used to say that a master may keep a servant or two to serve him. He does not need our services in the normal sense. If we only obey his commandments, keep our lives chaste and pure, we not only serve the master, but also our own self. The master loves them most who serve their own souls and lead a pious life. So, Swamiji exhorts us to imbibe the feeling of service and to refrain from sensual desires. All desires are included in sensuality. The observance of celibacy is most important. Just as light and darkness cannot stay together, the word and sensual desires are not compatible. Therefore, we must observe celibacy. Married people need not despair. They ought to live a disciplined life in accordance with the scriptures, where marital relations are permitted only for procreation. The family system is a great institution. Most saints or great souls, Mahatmas, were householders and fulfilled their family obligations. Hazur has said that those who wish to bring up their children pure and chaste should themselves become so. Children tend to emulate their parents. Swamiji thus asks us to take three steps if we want to rise above body consciousness and to get contact with Nam: to practice Simran, to serve Satguru, and to lead a chaste life. Swamiji says that you can have a taste of the divine nectar with the help of a true master only after you have brought your mind and sensual desires under control. At present, the soul is flowing out through the senses. Discipline your senses and keep your mind steady. You will then know who you are. When you have realized yourself, only then the question of realizing the over-self will arise. Those who have disciplined their senses can free themselves from the influence of enemies like lust, anger, greed, attachment, and vanity. These five deadly enemies attack us through the five senses. You can escape their fatal attacks if you rise above body consciousness. The Upanishads state, "The soul is riding a chariot of the body, driven by horses of the senses, with the mind as its reins and the intellect as its driver in the field of sensual pleasures." Swamiji, therefore, stresses the need to discipline the senses and the mind. When this is done, and the soul rises above body consciousness, the master is there inside to offer the divine elixir of Nam. Now, are these teachings meant for any particular sect? The teachings of all great souls are meant for the entire humanity and not for the followers of any particular religion. Hazur used to say, "Go to the door where Satguru, full of compassion and mercy, is waiting to receive you." Which is that door? This door is in the center and behind your two eyebrows. Once the soul gets an opportunity of testing the elixir of Nam, it has a starting point for its spiritual journey to the ultimate destination. Moreover, this will bring about freedom from the dragnet of the mind. Mind is a tremendous hurdle on the spiritual path. The world at large has always been its victim. Even Mahatmas and Rishis of the past, who tried various methods to control the mind, often succumbed at some stage to its powerful impact. So, we have to control the mind. How can it be done? The mind cannot be controlled by outer pursuits like learning or studying the scriptures. Even if it is under check for a while, it again goes out of control, for it is always after sensual pleasures. There are mainly two types of attractions for the mind: beautiful things to look at and sweet melodies to hear. Just now, if you happen to hear melodious music, your attention will be diverted to it. The only way to keep it under control is to link it with Nam, which has both these attractions. At various spiritual planes within, you have wonderful visions to see, as also enchanting melodies to hear. When the mind has more fascinating experience within than it has outside, it is automatically subdued. Thus, only by establishing a contact with Nam, one becomes desireless. According to a parable, once Lord Krishna plunged into the river Yamuna, where a thousand-headed cobra used to live. Lord Krishna performed a dance on the cobra's head to the tune of his favorite flute and subdued the deadly snake. What does the parable signify? The thousand-headed cobra is the mind itself. The mind poisons us in innumerable ways. By attuning to the celestial sound current within, mind can be subdued. There is no other remedy. A Muslim mystic has said that if you have firmly resolved to reach God, put one step on your mind, and the second step will be in God's court. Swamiji now advises us to give up procrastination and to start meditation without delay. Sahaj Yoga, the path shown by saints, has three aspects: Simran, meditation, and catching the celestial sound current. Simran lifts the soul above body consciousness. Once this is done, meditation or contemplation with rapt attention provides a resting place for its stay there until it catches and listens to the celestial sound current. Shams et-Tabriz says, "Every moment a divine sound is calling my soul to come to the Lord." Tulsi Sahib also says, "Listen with rapt attention at the archway of the real Kaaba, or body, and you will hear a call from the beyond." This body is the temple of God, and the forehead is the archway of the temple, as described by Tulsi Sahib. Procrastination is the thief of time. We tend to postpone meditation on one pretext or the other. Start meditation forthwith, so that we may come out of the mortal body, which is the domain of the negative power. After all, this body has to be left behind. If we learn to leave it while alive, death will not perturb us. You will then be carefree. Swamiji says that only the Satguru is capable of pulling the soul above body consciousness. Therefore, pray with every breath for the grace of a true master. I have already discussed the functions of Simran, that is, to bring the soul above body consciousness. Another equally important point is that the soul is attached to the body, and unless a competent master helps with his thought transference through personal attention, the soul cannot be separated and lifted above body consciousness. Here lies the greatness and importance of the Satguru. As a matter of fact, the real test of a guru is that he is capable of pulling the soul to its own seat. We must therefore pray for his grace and help. All great souls have prayed likewise. Maulana Rumi testifies it by asking, "Who is capable of saving the humanity from this mysterious box, the world?" Only either a prophet or a master commissioned to do that. We have thus to seek the help of a realized soul, but he must really be a realized soul. When a so-called master cannot lift his own soul above body consciousness, how can he help others? the responsibility of a competent master is great indeed. Not only does he guide and help us in this world, but he is also a torchbearer in our journey within. Swamiji therefore emphasizes that the only way out is to pray to a competent master. Out of compassion, he will give you an experience of super consciousness. Thereafter, follow his commandments. Remember him constantly with all your heart, and ever remain eager to serve him. Tulsi Sahib also asks us to look through the veil of darkness behind the pupil of the eyes. How to do it? He tells us to go to a God-realized soul. Such a master will give you some inner experience, pull you above body consciousness, and tell you how to see through the darkness within. Your inner eye will thus be opened. All saints agree on this point. Swamiji has advised us to seek the company of a true master with love. Go there with devotion, leaving behind all worldly ideas. You should then have only one thought, the thought of your master. Sit there with solitude and listen with full attention to what the master has to say. Swamiji now explains the importance of satsang. He says, attend satsang in all seriousness. We have to solve the mystery of life and death. Grasp and imbibe what is taught there. We are fortunate if we get in touch with a true master and get inner experience through his grace. If we do not act on his commandments, our spiritual progress will be retarded. That is why so much emphasis is laid on doing away with unnecessary worldly things. This way, one's spiritual experience will continue to grow till a luminous form of the Master appears within. He will talk to you and guide you. On getting proper guidance from the Master, devote adequate time to meditation and mold your life according to the Master's teachings. We must have tenacity of purpose, as we cannot afford to slacken our efforts in our present state when we have yet to rise above body consciousness. Finally, Swamiji explains what is Nam, the word. What is the destination, and what is our ideal? He says that our aim is to merge our soul with Sat Nam, true word, the eternal, nameless God power. We have first to rise above body consciousness and get the lowest link. After gradually traversing the various higher planes, the soul will finally reach where there is nothing but all truth. The three regions, primal, subtle, and causal, are destructible. Beyond these three regions is Sat Lok, or Sach Khand, which is the abode of the Almighty. This is our goal, and we must achieve it. Jesus Christ, at the time of leaving his immortal frame, instructed his disciples first to accomplish what he had taught them. The human birth has given you a golden opportunity. Make the best use of it. And that ends this talk. It's an English version and substance of one of Master's satsang talks in Hindi at Sawan Ashram. And now, with the few minutes I have left, I'm going to read another talk given by Master. It's also printed in the March 1968 Satsandesh. It has the title, The Prophet of Peace. And this is an English translation of a talk given by Master in Urdu, speaking about Guru Nanak and his message. It says it was broadcast on All India Radio on the occasion of the last birth anniversary of the Guru. We are today celebrating the birth anniversary of that great prophet of peace, the Messiah of his age, the fountainhead of spirituality, and the great God-man whose life radiated rays of spirituality towards the end of the 15th and the beginning of the 16th century. The social and political conditions in the country had then reached the lowest ebb. The exalted soul, who showed the path of peace and righteousness to the misguided people, was the great Guru Nanak. This great sun of spirituality rose on the horizon in the year 1469. He was born in Talwandi village, now known as Nakana Sahib, in West Pakistan. Chaotic conditions prevailed in the country at that time. In the name of religion, all kinds of atrocities were being perpetrated by those in authority, swayed as they were by lust, greed, and immorality. Mistrust and hatred were the order of the day. Both the rulers and the ruled had forgotten their respective duties and obligations. Casteism and untouchability were rampant. People were losing faith in religion. Moved by the piteous cries of the people in agony, Guru Nanak prayed, "The whole world is being consumed in the invisible flames of fire. Save it, O Lord, as best you may, in thy merciful compassion." Nanak was a great reformer. He was the torchbearer of peace, truthfulness, and universal love. He did not see man from the physical level, but as a spiritual being. He preached, "God is one, the creator of the universe. All are his children and belong to one family of man." He laid emphasis on the idea of universal brotherhood. Why then all this strife? God is love personified and abides in the human heart. There is one light that lighteth the entire creation. We should love all, the entire creation. Castes and creeds matter not in his realm. He who worships him is dear unto him. Guru Nanak's teachings are not for any particular sect or community, but are for the entire mankind. This savior of mankind traveled far and wide, not only in India, but also to distant lands like Ceylon, Burma, Mecca, Medina, and Mesopotamia. He delivered his divine message to all, irrespective of different religious and political ideologies. He believed in the religion of man and taught that the Lord's gospel was for all. When asked about his religion, he remarked, "Neither I am a Hindu nor a Muslim, but only have a body made up of five elements in whom pulsates the power of God, and called by the name of Nanak." He exhorted people to earn their living through fair and legitimate means. He went to the length of saying, "Bow not unto him who, claiming to be a God-man, lives on the charity of others. He who earns his living with the sweat of his brow and shares with all can know the path of God." He forbade people from encroaching upon the rights of their fellow men. Those who thrive on others can never have a pure heart. Time and again he enjoined upon all to have a pure heart and do good deeds. "Take the name of the Lord with a pure heart and a clean tongue, for without this what thou doest will not bear any fruit." Again, "It is only the deeds that count and not the religious hallmarks one bears. Whatever one soweth, that alone one harvesteth." He reiterated, "The deeds alone are weighed in the divine scale. This will determine whether you are near or far away from God." Today, men have lost sight of all human values in spite of epoch-making achievements in the field of science and technology. The devil in man is in the ascendancy. Human goodness has given way to lust, greed, and mistrust. we are all living in a state of horror and mistrust of each other. Mankind is heading towards its own doom. Today, as never before, we need the teachings of the great Guru. These are true for all times and for all the peoples the world over. We all pray for peace on earth. Nanak was the prophet of peace, unity, and love. If we follow the path shown by the great teacher and work wholeheartedly for the right understanding of the moral and spiritual values, peace, love, and happiness will reign supreme. It is only by self-knowledge and God-knowledge that we can establish the kingdom of God on earth. And that's all the time I have this morning. I was reading from two different talks given in the March 1968 issue of Satsandesh. Thank you, Master.
Thank you, David, for reading for us. There were 83 people at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
I said, I have come to make people see who do not see. Take heed that the light which is within you is not darkness. We are all children of light, enveloped by so many sheets. You know how to take off these sheets, you see the light is already there.